Good day and welcome to Personality Profile here on Joy 99.7 FM and Joy Prime as well. I'm Lexus Bill, and you know, when I take my seat like this, it means I have an amazing Ghanaian in my seat that we're about to get to know a bit more about, a bit more than we already know. And today I have a very, very wonderful guest, a very hardworking son of the land who has worked his way up the corporate ladder from academia to, you know, corporate now, and he sits at a very, very influential position in our oil and gas sector. You'd love to know him. So welcome along to Personality Profile. Let me tell you about my guest. He's a chartered sports and exercise psychologist. Yep, and an experienced management executive with varied background. He has over 16 years experience spanning higher education, research, human resource management, procurement, corporate social investment, regulatory and compliance, lobbying, government and stakeholder relations, crude oil marketing and trading as well. Yeah, he's a Commonwealth Scholar, an International Convention on Science, Education and Medicine and Sports Scholar as well. He was the founding head of Department of Sports Science at the University of Cape Coast. He holds a PhD in Sports Psychology from the University of Stirling, UK, and an MSc in Sports and Exercise Psychology as well from the Loughborough University, UK. He holds a Master's in Accounting and Finance and a Bachelor's degree in Psychology with Sociology, both from the University of Ghana at Lagon. Tell you what, he worked as a crude oil trader where, you know, he oversaw market research to support the pricing, trading and branding activities and ensure the effective promotion of Ghana's crude oil in conjunction with its partners. And he was also the manager responsible for crude oil and products marketing at the Ghana National Petroleum Corporation. As we speak, he sits in the seat of the Chief Executive Officer of the Ghana Chamber of Bulk Oil Distributors. Yes, my guest is the CEO of Seabot, Dr. Patrick Kweku Ofori. Yeah, and he's here. Doc, Akwaba.
Yeah,
Apomwe. And you're looking good.
Thank you. You
also, is it the grace of the new position or is it just life?
Oh, it's just the grace of God.
Yes. And how's it been so far?
Turbulent, at least, like a friend would normally say. You've always worked in a high performance environment.
Yeah.
And then also, it comes with the pressure. Mm. And then we see it more as a challenge and not a threat to our livelihood.
Right. This is, you're almost in your second year, right? You're almost, yes, 2 years as, yes, CEO.
Yes.
Wow. How challenging has it been?
It's been tough, judging from the time that I joined. Mm. And then also the gentleman that I took over from.
Senor Jose. Senor,
yes, who, yeah, is also another personality.
I know, right? Yes, great chap.
Great chap.
And yeah.
We actually met at Lagon.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
Okay.
We spent a couple of times at Ekwafo, although I'm from Lagon, but Lagon Hall, but
yeah,
predominantly I was with them at Ekwafo because of that.
Was it around the time he was selling bread?
Yes, around the time that he was selling bread and was also chasing his current wife. So I think it's we've been close way back.
Yes.
I think we read a couple of courses together, psychology, and then we both find our separate ways. And
yeah,
we ended up.
As life will have it, you end up, you know, taking up the same position
from him.
Wow, that's awesome. But what have you enjoyed about this role in the past 2 years?
I think the opportunity to know that you are also contributing a quota, and from my background and upbringing, I derive happiness from knowing that you are able to assist people and you are able to also lobby and push for, advocate for the voiceless.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a role that, apart from the opportunities and other things that you get, the doors that end up, opportunity that it opens, intrinsically to you, it gives you some form of fulfillment, knowing that at least somebody came to see you and you were able to negotiate on his or her behalf.
Yeah.
So that alone is the part that excites me about.
What would you say was the biggest challenge you've actually faced since taking up the role?
The biggest challenge, I think, unfortunately, was the at a point in time, 2022, when the exchange rate moved from 6 to 11, and then,
yeah,
within a week, moved from 11 cedis to 17. Those were the difficult times that we really faced. And then looking on sheepishly, knowing that your members are not actually being able to make ends meet, and yet you need to keep them going and more or less also serve as a voice of hope when not despair.
And that was actually just probably months after you had taken over.
Yes.
Because you took over in August, wasn't
yes.
it?
Yes. I took over in August, and then in October, it was turbulent all over.
At the point, did you think, maybe I made the wrong move or something?
I've never regretted any decision in my life.
Oh, really?
I've never regretted it. I see it as more or less, what are the lessons from this?
Mm-hmm.
And then how does this challenge me to make the next move? It was turbulent. Yes, I accepted the challenge. And then also a wonderful, young, vibrant board that I think we're able to weather the storm, and we're able to also come up with some form of innovation that I think posterity will be the one to judge us.
Yeah, and since you talked about lessons, what lessons did that particular moment teach you?
I think it was the only point in my life that I've struggled to sleep, and I've stayed up at night. And then not because that I was struggling to sleep, I don't have problem with sleep, but because your members were on the line with you, some key ones, conference call 12 midnight to 2 a.m. So those were the moments that you can also feel what they are going through.
Yeah.
Of course, it's a call to serve. And then if those that I'm serving, and I normally will not even refer to myself as the chief executive, as the chief messenger, if the one who is paying you is unable to sleep, I don't think you've got a right to sleep.
Yeah.
So that was how I felt for them. And so that we empathize and we all were able to go through the story.
We'll get into the thick of your work, because I see that it's quite an interesting field that you're in.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is you have been in sport and exercise science most part of your life.
Yeah.
And now you're in oil and gas full time. It's like two poles apart.
Yeah.
But let's start with the sports bit. I'm quite curious. Do you play any sport?
Table tennis, yeah. I've played table tennis at the secondary school, and table tennis and hockey.
Mm.
Apart from that, I believe in exercise, that every morning I have to do some number of minutes of walk or kilometers before.
But you don't play any sport now?
I don't play any competitors, except maybe playing with my children.
Your children. Oh, okay. Good stuff. Anyway, we'll get to know a bit more about you. Let's start from the beginning. Let's get to know where you're from. Where were you born? Where did you grow up?
Kumasi Pankrono, Tafu Pankrono.
Oh, Tafu Pankrono.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. I lived in Kumasi for a bit. So
where?
Yeah. I lived at Ahinsan Estates.
Ahinsan Estates. Oh,
yeah.
Then Ahinsan Estates, Salisbury, because I'm also a Kumasi High School boy. So
that is actually
our 18.
And I worked at Ahunju Runabout.
Ahunju
Runabout. So I used to leave Ahinsan Estates to Ahunju Runabout.
Okay.
And Kumasi is one of the best places to live, honestly.
Oh, you love it, man.
Yeah. How was growing up?
It was good. My dad was a policeman, and my mom was entrepreneur, and I think she had a lot of influence on me about my approach to life. And at any point in time, there were countless number of people in our home. And I remember during my master's time, somebody called me that he remember in 83 or so, the Christmas, if they eat chicken, they have to come to my mom's house. So my graduation, he said that, Akosi's child's son is graduating, and now he is in London. So he sent me £300 to buy a suit for my graduation.
Wow.
So that was the impact that my mom had on, and then always telling us that you need to find a way of be very accommodating and then respect for women. And you always say, when I have some form of rubbles with my kid sister, I say, hey, would I? Hey, you can't ascend to any throne in Ashanti, you know. You need to have a sister that you are protective of. So that has always been the upbringing, moving around, and then also, and a very challenging one. And I was a tough nut to crack for her, because of all her children, I was the one that she was somehow, in a way, more particular about, because I think I was not the strongest. Mm. I frequently get sick.
Okay.
But I was also the one who was somehow very tough, and then somehow vagabond, because everywhere in Kumasi where there was a Bopa, you know, what we normally refer to as Bopa in Kumasi.
Yeah.
So the likes of Joe Louis, K. Usu, Kwakudia, Adodua, and Newiasi, and all those guys. So we moved them, Baba Idi, Idi Penny, and then Idi Kitwa. So we moved from Asafo, and then Asim Park, then we go to Menchia Cricket, and then the Patansi Ball Park, then we go to Bremai, and then Mercy, all those. And then we also created that. So growing up, I saw Odate and Allah playing in Pankrono Ball Park, and that is how, where we do. And then Kumasi, our normal Kubu Kubu, right, whereby you dash to get a few coins to rent a bike, and then also enjoy what
you,
we
you,
know.
You literally lived the Kumasi lifestyle.
I could walk from Pankrono to now the military base in, you know, when on your way to McLean Hotel.
Okay.
Like officers' mess. Officers' mess where Kotoko used to train before Herbert Mensah came in, and then also previously where Kotoko was training at the Heroes Park.
Mm.
So we'll go through that very famous point, that famous goal that Peter Oforiquet scored against Kotoko that denied them that goal. So I leave the Kumasi that we hit. By the time we get to KJTI, we go through the Fools line, walk on the railway line, get to Akotialai, and then you connect to Amako and then Kumasi Sports Stadium to either watch the training or the evening matches and all that. Then you get some senior guys who will hold your hands and then enter. So I believe I enjoy my days there.
Yeah, I can tell. How many siblings did you have?
My mom, biologically, my dad's side were about 18.
Okay.
And then my mom had 7.
I see.
So I think I came from
18, that's a big family.
Yeah, and the old boy tried as much as possible to support and give everybody the opportunity that he wanted to do.
It's interesting, you've actually talked about the influence of your mom for the most part. You didn't say much about your dad, who was a policeman.
Yeah, my dad, I think my planning and my meticulousness in some of the decisions that I make was that, and I remember very well, and I think these, we have some of these conversations for young men too. They say, hey, I remember when I first started my first job, and you, it's his perception about life will interest you. He said, Kwaku, now that you've started life, at any point in time, you need to ensure that you have a saving that when your mom died and when your father died, you use it for their funeral. And one thing that you should avoid is that when your son is sick and then you are calling a friend or somebody to say that, can you really get me money to either pay your child's school fees or so, said that does not define you as a man.
Mm.
And these were the kind of things that he said, and also living very modestly. And he could plan everything to the extent that when he died and he opened his box, of his about 12 or so children who were abroad, every money that anybody has given him, he has recorded and left that money there and provided money for his own funeral. But this is how I want it to be done. I want to be buried on the Thursday, and then Friday you guys should have a live one and let people drink, and then Saturday you do a grand funeral for me. And he made provision for all that. So those who were even abroad and returned, he purchased their tickets.
Wow. Before he passed?
Before he passed. That was how he planned his life. He left over 22 buildings for his children. And you know what he left me?
What?
His guns.
His guns? Wow. Why do you think he left you the guns?
So I think my wife asked Professor Opanyejikum of University of Ghana. I said, well, of all his children, he's the one that he trusts that you can protect your other sibling. So as a duty call to also protect your siblings and then guide them, and that if he could leave you his gun, it means he could trust you with his life.
Wow. That's an amazing lesson, eh?
Yeah.
Did you feel that responsibility as well to protect your siblings? Do you think that?
I still do.
Okay.
I still do, and especially for the females around, that you need to ensure that they are okay, and you also need to check on them. Like the Akans have this proverb, you can literally beat a woman who has no man in his family and then walk majestically. But if you are attacking a lady with a brothers, definitely you can hit her, but you have to run.
Yeah. Man, I'm totally loving this. These are some really amazing lessons I probably wouldn't have even thought about, but this is really cool. Would you say he passed a rich man?
He never lived a life as a rich man. And I remember in his hometown, I think one of his properties went to teachers who live there in Akokofe, and then one also as a community health center for them, and then left other properties for his other children. But I, growing up, I understand them because those my siblings that he left those properties were their background is from voter Everbed because they are patrilinear. Mm. So he felt there is a responsibility for him to pass those properties to them, which after growing up, I understand. And then his children who were Ashantis, he felt that you are more matrilinear and that everything you should rather seek those guidance and support from your uncles and other things. And I think to be fair to him on those traditional ethos, I don't begrudge him for that. And I remember what one senior Supreme Court judge advised during the time that others were pushing that, no, you need to contest their will. And I said, and then they said, no, you all have got potential to also build your own legacy. Why fight over somebody? The best thing that he gave you was the tenets of hard work, mm-hmm. and then the social lessons and life, how to plan. And critically, I think he was telling me something that Kwaku, it's most likely I will go before your mom, and when your mom passes, you need to step up and then do a befitting funeral for her. And then I think it's one thing that he said. And then also he said, as an Ashanti man, you also have an additional responsibility. And that responsibility is a befitting burial for your in-laws. So I think at least once both in-laws are alive, you clearly think that there's extra provision that you need to make to ensure that you take care of them.
I see. Now, as a young person, what profession did you want to get into?
Initially, I really wanted to be a mining engineer.
A mining engineer?
Yeah. And I think even after secondary school, I nearly entered Colorado School of Mines. But a few things happened that couldn't ensure that at that time. Mm. I think just transferring the $50 application fee, I think that time it was only Stanchart and Barclays who could do that. But sending that, you needed additional $45. $45 to transfer only $50. So it's not like today that we can easily, with an app or a bank transfer, it was that easier. The other banks could not even do those transfers that time. But I think the path has been good from where I've been. And I caused a lot of troubles as a young chap, especially to my mom, who was determined to get me to go to school.
Like what?
The brain was there, but to sit down to study, to sit down in the classroom. Mm-hmm. So we checked my career progress, especially at the primary level and other things. That truncated because I think about there was a time that for about months they were looking for me, but I was all over Kumasi. Like I told you, the life that I was living earlier on. And that was difficult for, that was really difficult for the old lady. And she was determined to ensure that I stick in. But I always felt that I would go. And I remember very well, my mom took a taxi and then we drove around KNUST. She said this, Kwaku, these are proceeds from our parents and our grandfather's cocoa. So if you don't really sit down and study to also benefit from this education, you're not going to. You have disappointed all your ancestors. And other few things that she says that was that critical. And I remember saying to the sensei, why would you want to? I said, you've been born to kill elephants. Why do you waste your time on lizards? You've been born to hunt for elephants. Why do you waste your time on lizards? Mm. So it means that you've been born to be great. Why do you want to settle for less? So those were some of the lessons that transform and change our way of life and thinking.
Okay. So You went through school. What did you study in secondary school?
I did geography, economics, maths, pure maths.
And that's at where?
Kumasi High.
Kumasi High, yeah, right. And then from there to University of Ghana, Lagos.
No, I was trained as a teacher.
You were trained as a teacher?
At Wesley College.
At Wesley College?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So that path, was it your choice or you wanted to fill a gap?
I wanted to fill a gap because that was a time that I think during the late President Rawlings' time, the university lecturers were on strike, that we had to stay home for about 2 or 3 years.
Right.
And then I said that I have to be, have to go to training college. And that also brought its own issue. I remember at that time, a female friend that was who, Nora Iskwaku's girlfriend, those who, I think Ralph and Ralph Jamra and then Rudolph and the guys who know our upbringing. And then she said, "What? Because you are going to training college, now I'll settle for somebody who is going to tackle school of mine because that is a tertiary institution." So then my quest for education then became, well, I will at least seek a terminal degree so that no lady in future will use,
That
education against me.
So you never ended up with her?
No.
Because you went to
the training college. Yeah.
Wow. Do you know where she is now?
Yeah, I think she's in Accra here now.
And what does she say now?
I don't know where she lives, but occasionally.
Yeah. I'm sure she says, "Oh, well, he turned out great after all."
No, I don't think she regrets, but it's normal.
Yeah.
But you not even concede.
Yeah, absolutely. So after the teacher training, did you teach some more?
That is another influence that my mom had. I think they gave me at that time, they say, "Oh, you can do some connection." I remember that time people were organizing money to be paid so that they would be placed in either Kumasi or Accra or those places. And then I was that friend, do I have to pay anybody to get it? So they posted me to a village in Bekwai called Kobro. And then I remember I go to Bekwai District Education Office and I asked the District Education Officer, I said, "Well, he doesn't know the area. I have to go to the station." I went to the Bekwai, the station there, said that I should pick a car to Jakobu and then from Jakobu go to Abu Akwa. And then if I manage to get there on the Tuesday, it's only Tuesday that there's a car go to Kobro.
Wow.
And then, so it means the day that I was going to check, there was no way I could get to Kobro.
Yeah.
Unless when I get there, I walk that 5 miles to Abu Akwa, where I basically couldn't have done that. So I went home and I tell my mom that I'll go. And he said, "Who told you you are going to go there? I'm not letting you go to any village whereby the queen mother or the king, they will get you their daughter and your dreams and aspiration will end in that village. I'm not going to allow you to go." And then said, "Have you bought the university forms?" And then I think I bought Tech, Legon, and then UCC. I got Cape Coast. I thought I was going to Cape Coast. And then KNUST also came that time. Renewable resources were somehow hold that and land economy. And then Legon came. And I remember another person who, my stepdad, the late Adubafo, said, "No, Legon is the premier university. You have to go to Legon." But Legon, they've given me classics, religion, Kiswahili, and then philosophy. So, but the hope and aspiration was that once you do the justify your inclusion after level 100, you can get a course to another course to do. And then my dad said he was interested in me doing law, and I said no, because I want to. I didn't think I had what it takes to do law, but I think I could go to school for me because of my math background or do something that is a bit mathematically inclined.
Okay.
So after level 100, I got psychology, social work, and sociology. And then that was the route to. And Professor Dankwa, may his soul rest in peace, had a great influence on me.
What Let's backtrack a little bit. I'm just curious about something.
Yes.
What your mom said, what your mother said before you go into Cobro, or when you went to try to get to Cobro and you didn't make it, right?
Yeah.
What she said that she wouldn't allow you to go to Cobro for some chief or some traditional leaders to let some girl, whatever.
Yeah.
Was it more about you, or it was more about the traditional leaders?
I think she was experienced to have known that a lot of teachers who were posted to those communities at certain times in their life, because you take a wife in that community, moving out of that community limits your progress.
Okay.
So it becomes difficult. So unless you are, you have that self-will and that determination to move out there. And he was also, and she also felt that she knew that had it not been the delay, because the university lecturers were on strike, I should have been able to go straight to the university.
Okay.
So that was what she, not that I was that bad, but of all the things that I could do, not actually women and alcohol at the secondary school, even at the university level. No, I remember the first time that I even tasted alcohol was in during my master's 2025 at Labra when this...
No, not 2025. 2005,
yeah.
Right, good.
2005.
Yeah, 2005.
2005. And I remember very well the song that was, I think that time that was when some of your rivals, the radio stations have come and it was online.
Yeah.
And I remember all the undergraduate students that had gone and I was the only one there.
Yeah.
And then I took a walk through the Great Ashby Road to go to Tesco's.
Okay.
A particular song that was being played was I'm actually this song, and I can.
Which one? You,
said, Emra Odo drew a shame jina biahono. Odo fee manon ames me fee nano. When in baby you name the emu, Odo quire maintaining can be obeying coherence. Odo much. So I remember that song as the song that actually made me taste alcohol for the first time.
Wow, I'm totally loving this, and I hope you are as well if you're checking us out. This is Personality Profile. I'm Lexis Bill, and today I'm spending time with the CEO of the Ghana Chamber of Bulk Oil Distributors, Dr. Patrick Kweku Ofori. Doc, we've enjoyed the journey so far, but I think around this time we're in the UK, right?
Yeah.
Where you were doing your master's, was that it?
Yeah.
Yes, and you did your master's in sports science, sports and exercise science.
Yeah.
How come?
You know, I work a bit with Papa Bills and then the crew from Multimedia.
At Adon, really? At Papa Bills.
Yes, and then I also offer Kwabena Kwachi, Fiapokia during that time. And I think it was the Athens Olympic Games, whereby there were a lot of Aziz Zachary, Nkansa, and then Ekuya Sehwa, an athlete. When you check all their time, it was that good that at Athens we expected that at least we should pick a couple of medals. Then the late Rashid Bawa committee report, then he was the deputy minister for sports, came out that because the team went out there with less number of sports scientists attached to the team. At that time, I was also thinking of, after national service, I was thinking of doing my master's. I think I've gotten Alliant International for Industrial and Organizational Psychology. I've gotten Masterage for Public Administration and Finance, and I think Lancaster in UK for Finance and Management. And then Lavra, Sports and SI Psychology. But the Lavra one came with a scholarship because in the motivational statement, I've cited the Bauer report. I've cited the Bauer report that Ghana, we actually lack sports science personnel to be able to do that. So because of that, they were interested. And before the rest could even waiting for the US I-20 masterage, I needed to wait till December. I've gotten an offer and a full package paid for by Labra to leave, I think, before August ending.
Okay.
So that was
how come.
So that was the first come first. And then also, I felt that doing something in sports psychology, sports and exercise psychology, also gave me was to give me the opportunity to combine my career with my passion. Like I've told you, the days of the ballpark flowing, and then also another thing that I didn't even say was I was good at writing the Jama Kumasi High School, some of the Samamus we are composed at the Wesley College. I also used to compose songs and other things. So I was so much into the sports to the extent that I would do in to be in the team bars. And then I remember high school as a Kosu Ninja, he wants me closer and others to be part of that. So I felt that it was more or less a build up to something that I enjoy doing, and then also getting that professional qualification. In addition, being the first sports and exercise psychologist for the country at that time was something that was exciting, because you check the data and other things, that there wasn't anything like that. And the team of researchers, Chris Howard, Chris Prey, Stuart Bill, Lavalle, these were all renowned names, Joseph Via, in terms of, you can mention any particular aspect of sports psychology without this team being the one to lecture you. It was something that I love to be there. And I remember one of our practicals, well, at that time, Tim Herman was the British number one tennis player, and then was a top seed globally. You have them, Johnny Wilkinson, their cricketers and all that, coming through Labra. So you're already being prepared for the elite sporting environment. So that alone build the narrative for me to be there, and then also enjoy the challenge. And I think around that same time, once you are doing sports science, because they were preparing for the London Olympic bid, and Labra played a critical role, everybody who was doing sports science and other things was doing photocopies and printing for free, because Lotto Sports UK were paying for that. So the incentive, in addition to that personal drive, was there for me to settle for Labra. Okay. And that was how come I landed up there.
But weren't you worried about the employment opportunities back home, especially because there were not a lot of sports and exercise psychologists back here?
Yes, I saw that as a challenge. So when I came back, I decided, and I remember my professor, Professor Dankwa, said, Patrick, I'm giving you this reference with the hope that you will come and set this up in Ghana and propagate it. So when I returned and I joined ADUM, I was doing time with a sports psychologist at ADUM, and then later moved with the team that left ADUM to join Oman and the two when Kennedy Empire started. So I did that, and then also did a lot of voluntary and community work, contributing to New Adibiasi, Tema Youth, Brekum Chelsea, their contribution, Wild Stars. I worked with Masu Akunadu there, and when the former IFA president set up Wild Stars to get those promotions. So I enjoy being there. And then also knowing that I'm always on the go was something that I love being doing.
Yeah.
And the opportunity of meeting and then moving with these players and all these top level athletes was something that I felt at home around them. And that is how come
You came back to help set up the Department of Sports Science.
Yes,
at UCC.
UCC.
Because you were employed there as a lecturer now.
Yes, I was employed there as a lecturer. But what most people don't realize is that most of the sports psychology theories, be it achievement goal, orientation, the motivational theories, and then the teamwork, team dynamics, and all those things that are being used in the corporate world, the marginal gain principles, all the what-if scenarios, and planning and strategy, they all came from sports psychology literature, career transition and planning, retirement planning, and how to even manage a lifestyle of athlete. So these were things. So, and then the role models, Lavalle, that I look up to and work closely with, all his big gigs were not within sports. He worked for NASA, he worked for the English FA for referees, and then worked for others, the Biddle and the rest, putting a case against the marginalization of the UK food chain to prevent a healthy lifestyle. So all these were other things that gives me the opportunity that, no, I just need to accept the challenge and be diverse, that I can work in different fields.
Okay.
In as much as I'm prepared to take the gamble.
And your training at Wesley College would also help you because now you're a lecturer.
Yes, I'm a teacher. So normally I'll tell my students that it's not just anybody standing. So I know the rudiments of teaching methodology, how to even stand before the class, how to ask questions, how to engage your class, and how to improvise.
Well, good stuff. So we've gone through the story and crude oil has not come in at all. So at what point did crude trading come in?
You know, one so it happened by accident, but I've always felt that I used to consult for British Council. Mm-hmm. So I did a couple of work for them, I think, for Talos scholarships. I was one of their panelists, and then also addressing the skills gap. And then now ILET, which has now become that, well, one of those consultants who led the work. So I think they brought in a team from Uganda, East Africa, for them to, how can we address the skills gap, the needs assessment of all those aspects. And then later GIZ was also doing something for Eastern Africa. So GIZ, I had that gig to do that work. And through that, GMPC, I think there was a change of government, and my godfather, Keke, was going there. I was looking through, I think you met somebody who has recommended that, oh, for your vision and some of the things that you are talking that you want to do at GMPC, you need to meet this guy. And he said, oh, I know him already. So he tasked us to write the GMPC Foundation, how the foundation needed to be set up.
Okay.
So I first got into, previously I'd worked in Temawe Refinery.
Okay.
But in HR and procurement roles. And then when GMPC opportunity came, I took that. And then there was more or less an internal coup in GMPC where people felt that certain roles are meant for party people, but so I needed to, they needed to move me around. So they moved me around, and then there was a gentleman who had worked with him at TOR, and I was working closely with him when I joined GMPC as in charge of corporate reporting, when I moved from the GMPC Foundation to corporate reporting, liaising with Parliament and then all the necessary stakeholders, building those advocacy and then also lobbying. So I was, because he was at the crude oil marketing, Beidou decided to take an early retirement. So my former boss, who all reporting to Mr. Dazi, decided that, well, since you've worked closely with him, you can also do that. But around that time when I joined GMPC and we're moving around up and down, I realized that everything, the bottom line was finance and accounting, and I needed to get the basis. So quickly, I enrolled in University of Ghana Business School to do accounting and finance, and then got that. So when that opportunity came around at all, I already had the qualification and the background, because most of the things that they were doing, I was preparing for them. So, so it was easier to step in. Mm. So that was how come I took over from, and that is where my commercial activity in the oil and gas space started.
Wow.
Coupled with my previous role as more or less leading the stakeholder lobbying activities, yes, and then visiting parliamentarians and other key stakeholders, the PIAC, working with them, or build the opportunity for me to work closely with those entities.
And I realized that all of these was building you up to your current role now.
Certainly.
Because even though it's oil and gas, you need a little bit more than the industry knowledge.
Yes.
You need the stakeholder engagement, you need to know how to negotiate and all of those things. And that opportunity also came along.
Yes, and most especially how to cope with pressure.
Ah, right.
Dealing, working with the stream environment. And so it's typical about on the eve of a game, how that goes around. And I remember my time with the Black Stars in South Africa 2013. I think before the Kibedian game, it was tough.
Mm.
So when the one day that I had a sleepless night, so I needed to call one of my mentors, Bob Aaron, who had also consulted for Tiger Woods and other things, that he said, yeah, well, you need to go through this. You need to forget that you are a Ghanaian and see yourself as a psychologist for the team, because if emotions are transient, I remember his words that during that midnight call, South Africa and America doing that Skype call with him, telling me that. So that is when I said, when the psychologists need a psychologist to be able to also cope with the pressures of the environment and the key things. So just after that, I went for a course in UK about self-awareness as a psychologist, how you should be able to alienate your personal sentiments and emotions from the situation that you find yourself in. And I think that has actually helped me to be able to navigate the path. So I remember currently in the last few, there are a lot of pressure moments over the weekend about issues that maybe we'll come back to it later on. And in the midst of all those discussions, I'm able to crack a joke, and then one of the guys said, so how do you get this? I said, you know something, if you don't learn how to cope with the pressure, it will affect your performance in other facets. And if you are not careful, you may lose your significant others.
That's very ambiguous and very loaded, but you will decode that later. Amazing stuff. But I'm sure you're enjoying the role now as the CEO of the chamber. In the past couple of days, there's been a lot of agitation from, you know, I'm sure your members, from motorists and drivers, prices of fuel going up and skyrocketing. Some people are even fearing that in a few days we probably might be hitting 18 cities per liter and all of those things. I mean, what are your thoughts? Do we expect a spiral, you know, hike in the prices?
I don't foresee that. I think we are. You check the world price. U.S. have ramped up production purposely to ensure that OPEC and the Russians cannot necessarily create artificial shortage to put prices up. Mm-hmm. So that gives us a bit of respite. And then also we know that once they return from the spring meeting, there are a couple of goodies that comes in that will help us stabilize the currency. So that also give us that comfort that I don't foresee prices getting to that. So once we have relatively a stable currency and the city behave itself, I don't foresee us getting to 18 cities or even beyond what the present market it is now.
Okay. So I've been part of a lot of climate action campaigns. I mean, recently I joined Her Excellency, the Second Lady, Her Excellency Samira Bawumia, in one of her campaigns on climate action. Oh, this is for the planet. I'm doing this for the planet.
Pro bono.
But, you know, the energy transition campaigns are ramping up very fast. I mean, globally, there's a shift to more, you know, sustainable energy or energy conserving forms and all of that. People gradually moving away from fossil fuels and whatnot. Are you concerned that it's probably going to affect your members' production? And how is the industry supposed to actually shape up for this gradual transition, which is really seeing some momentum?
It's seeing some momentum, but you check of the investment that they've actually made in renewable and all the other. Yes, it's a good and a nice thing to have. You check for every $4 or so trillion invested in renewable research and then campaign, and just increase since only about 1% or so of the energy demands that are that energy demand for renewables or any of those electric vehicles or the so-called cleaner fuels. I think we are concerned, and also as a responsible entity, we ourselves also have embark on a series of activities, one to engage policies and then also initiatives. So for last year, for instance, I think a couple of our members, we planted more than 2,000 trees. This year, we intend wrapping up to about 10,000 trees to also a way of enhancing the green activities. But as a country, we have a certain responsibility, and that goes hand in hand. And I'm glad about the kind of work that the Ghana Energy Transition team put together, trying to contextualize the energy transition campaign and then the narrative. Because if we are not careful, we stand the risk of jumping the gun and adopting what we may not necessarily be ready for. Mm. So I think we don't necessarily need to go ahead of ourselves or skip a stage in our development in the name that our partners, our Western or developed partners are going there. You check the global pollution index, and the contribution from our part of the world doesn't come anywhere near the West. So if there is a need and a call for energy transition, yes, we want to go at our pace, but also fund more research and ensure that we're able to get there at the right time. But what we'll recommend is that we tread cautiously and don't just follow because others are doing it. But I think that it's a momentum that we are all concerned. But we've also had a couple of discussions with the ministry with regards to policy direction and how we protect our investment, especially if we are to invest in renewables, let's say ethanol productions and other things, ethanol depots and other things. How then do they ensure that the policy protects their investment and that they are able to recoup that? So okay. These are discussions that is ongoing.
So in the last couple of days as well, I think SML has been back into the conversation. The president actually accepted KPMG's audit recommendations to terminate the upstream petroleum and minerals audit service provided by the Strategic Mobilization Ghana Limited. I'm sure you've been following the conversations as well. I think he also instructed the Ministry of Finance to renegotiate the revenue assurance contract with SML. What are your thoughts about this development? Do you think it's the way to go?
Well, I think at least we've seen that the president has taken some level of action. The key gains from that is the changing it from a variable fee to a fixed fee. I think that is those who set that up was a bit unconscionable. And then also, but the my fundamental issue is that if the basis of that contract was flawed, that it didn't have a PPA approval, then everything under it, irrespective of the goods, that we should start afresh and open up. There are others who can also offer a superior technology. You know, one thing I love about some of this competition. Competition brings the best in you. It's similar to once you go to two people selling watches, one has a key, one the other hasn't got a key. You know, and let's just, you remember those days when you were chasing the one that the competition was great, you tend to pay more particular attention because you know if you are not careful and you are not regular there,
your competitor
may take advantage and make some gains. So I think it's only fair that we try as much as possible to enhance competition. Yeah. But one key thing that other key CSOs are pushing for that we all want to know is that at least it's only fair for us to see the full KPMG document published for everybody to see where and the processes that went through and how best we can also learn lessons from this and ensure that if there are any gaps, we fulfill it. We are for the government recovering every revenue, but there are certain things that I think we need to.
So you would have suggested that the whole contract be probably halted and renegotiated, or and probably open it up
for fresh competition. Yes, also, or maybe temporary. Mm. Whilst they are doing that, we think that is a revenue assurance. We give them maybe 3 months for them to wrap up while the competition is going on.
Yeah,
for them to do that. They talk about their experience. We need to know what they've done previously before winning that on the I'm actually not for sole sourcing form of contract. At least competition in every facet of life brings the best in everyone.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. We've talked a bit about industry. We're almost running out of time, but you've had a very colorful life, if I can put it, with different industries, different experiences and whatnot. Now, with all of these things, what's the biggest lesson life has taught you?
I think the biggest lesson life have taught me is to be humble, honest, ethical standards of work, being able to network, not burning bridges, to say, and then also giving back to humanity.
Mm.
It gives you joy. And then planning, because everything about life, you have to be deliberate about it.
What's your greatest fear?
In natural sense, I'm not actually afraid of anything. My greatest fear is, I would say my greatest fear is for the future of Ghana. Many have not really taken time to look at it. But you check the number of children on the street knocking on your doors for that 50 or 20 pesos. My greatest fear is that not giving people level playing field, meritocracy is now on the descendancy in our country. My greatest fear is, are we able to consolidate this country under democracy? And I think every citizen should be worried and be frank with ourselves that we need a system that gives each and every one of us a level playing field and competition to ensure that at least we all can compete fairly.
You're selfless, Alice. Your final comments made me believe so. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm grateful that you got to spend time with us.
Thank you too for the time and the opportunity. I see it as a privilege for me to be here, seeing Lexus with the gray hair.
Sadly. Is that why you took yours off?
Yeah. You know.
I was going to say your barber did a good job, but it looks like you're hiding some white hair.
Oh, no.
Oh, there's no white hair.
You can't sit in such positions without them coming up. So I prefer, I don't like the Yomosu.
Okay.
If there is nothing, there is nothing.
Okay, all right.
I prefer a zero-sum game.
A zero-sum game, okay, I hear you. Anyway, I'm very grateful that we got to spend time to talk here. Oh, and actually, earlier today, you released a press statement about opposing the Bulk Energy Storage Transportation Company Limited as the sole aggregator of the Central Oil Refinery Limited. Why?
I told you earlier on and that we enjoy competition, and none of us set up our businesses to offtake from BOST, members or BEST. The reason why we are saying that is that at least Centio is a private entity or refinery, which we enjoy our working relationship with them excellently. We are also Bidex, that are also private entity. And all that we are requesting is that they should push all the private sector to also join the government initiative, the Go For Oil program, so that we all help address the forest requirement for the sector. We don't want to design models whereby the model seeks to center another entity to be the one that you need to pass through him. So it's like nobody gets to send you
except through
BOST.
BOST.
And I don't think it's fair for competition. And not only that, we also stand the risk of situating everything with one entity that should anything go bust, all of us are somehow going to suffer. But let each individual enjoy their trading relationship with the refinery. Let each individual on their own merit negotiate and compete. We shouldn't try and create a corner. It's like we have a referee or a father who wants to protect his favorite son or daughter and trying to put largesse and everything. We don't have anything against BOST. Personally, we don't see boss as a threat to our businesses. But we don't support government deliberately imposing boss on us, because none of us conducted our structures, our business models, by buying through boss.
Okay. Okay, I think it makes it clear a bit now. Thank you so much. Dr. Patrick Kweku Ofori is the Chief Executive Officer of the Ghana Chamber of Bulk Oil Distributors, and he's been my guest on Personality Profile. I'm Lexus Bill on behalf of my crew. Thank you so much for staying with us and listening in. And next week, we'll bring you another great conversation.